Hello, listeners and fellow book lovers. Welcome to The Book Snug, a bi-weekly conversational podcast about books and the reading life. My name is Julia.
And I'm Stephanie.
And we're a mother and daughter who love reading and talking about books. The ones we adore and the ones we don't. We're delighted you're here, so grab your favorite hot drink or ice-cold beverage and settle in for another cozy, bookish chat.
Hi, Julia.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, listeners.
Hi, friends.
Welcome to the Book Snug.
Hey.
We're so glad you're here.
Yes.
If you're back as a repeat listener, we're so glad to have you back. And if you're new, welcome.
Yes.
How are you today, Julia?
I'm good. I had my first quiet, slow Sunday in a couple of months, and it was lovely.
And now you're here recording.
Yes, and I have a very busy week coming up. A lot of driving, so I have the Sunday scary.
Yeah. The Sunday blues, that's what I call them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm good. I worked very hard this weekend physically.
At the cabin.
We were at the cabin cleaning windows and painting and just doing a lot of very physical work. And I'm tired.
Right. A project that's never seeming to finish.
No.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder if it will ever be done.
I mean, it looks great so far. So it feels like we're getting really close.
You can at least stay inside.
Yes. It's very cozy to stay inside.
What are you drinking today, Julia?
Well, I think we're drinking the same thing.
We are. So go ahead. Tell our listeners.
It's that kind of recording day afternoon that we just kind of grabbed and are running with it. But I think this is a stash.
It's a Bigelow. Do you want me to just say what it is?
Yeah, you do that.
Okay. It's Bigelow's decaffeinated vanilla tea. It's a black tea, but it has a vanilla flavor. And it's nice for the afternoon because it tastes good and it's not going to keep you up till 2 o'clock in the morning. Or me. It's not going to keep me up till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
I think we mentioned on our last podcast that we were going to be talking about fictional worlds that we want to visit. And this is still a topic that we would definitely like to bring to the show and discuss.
Yes.
We have already recorded an episode with that topic and it was trash.
Did not go well.
For one thing, we recorded it on a Monday night.
Which is never good.
Monday nights are our worst time for recording. I lecture all day. I don't have any voice left. We're both exhausted. We can't pull any real words from our brains. And it honestly sounded like
we're struggling.
Soup. Yeah. And then on top of that, I at least, and I think you too, Julia, have been in a pretty good reading slump.
Yeah.
To the point where I wasn't really interested in even talking about books. So I was having a hard time getting geared up to be excited about anything.
Yeah.
No worlds I wanted to visit, no books I wanted to talk about.
Right, right. I was the same with Ben this afternoon. He's like, I don't want to record this afternoon. It's not that these topics aren't interesting. They're not interesting for me right now,
right.
Which is, I think, the struggle that we've been running into, like to make it a little bit more clear that it's not that these are bad topics or uninteresting topics. We just are both unmotivated towards them right now.
Right. I'm not motivated at all for books.
Yeah.
And that makes it really, really hard then to do a good show. So we've changed our topic, thinking that that might help a little bit. And we are going to be talking about books, but we're going to be talking about them in terms of stories that we've read that we would love to see on the big screen or the little screen. And so I have some options for both today.
Yeah.
But what type of movies or shows, Julia, do you like to watch generally? Like if you're going to pick out a movie on Amazon Prime or whatever and watch it on a Sunday afternoon, what do you gravitate towards?
Yeah, I mean, before I answer that, I want to say that this episode is going to be a good companion to our episode of The Movie Was Better. So if you're looking for similar conversations, that's another good one to go back to.
That's a good thing to mention.
Yeah.
I'll post the link in the show notes.
Yep. I am very eclectic, and I find that my movies tend to be where I don't always want my books to be dark and gritty. Sometimes my movies tend to be, or I allow myself to watch things that maybe are more apocalyptic or deal with more real stuff, and my books, I don't want them to at all.
That is so interesting. I'm the opposite.
Really?
I would much rather read darker material, grittier material than watch it on a screen. Because I feel like my brain can control more how I'm seeing the story, where when I'm watching mm-hmm. a movie, I'm intaking what somebody else visualized. Mm-hmm. So I'm far more likely to pick up a horror book than I am to watch a horror movie or anything that's... Sure.
Right. So in that context, yes, if it's going to be a scary book, I'd rather be able to monitor it myself mm-hmm. instead of a movie, because there is something to be said about, like, once you see something, you can't get it out of your head.
Right, it's there.
And reading it, you can kind of, you can skim a page, you can do what you need to.
Or you can tweak the image.
Yeah.
Or maybe you never had a full image in your right. head, so it's not quite as traumatic.
Right. But like, so The Scribe, which I talked about earlier that I read this year.
Yeah.
That book, I didn't enjoy it as a book setting, but it would have been something as a movie I probably would have watched with Ben.
Okay.
So to kind of use that as an example, but I love historical fiction shows. I have loved the Gilded Age Netflix show, and I have to wait a year for the next season to come out. So I'm very annoyed about that, but also Black Mirror. Uh-huh. We just finished Fringe. So the spread is really all over the place. I've mentioned a lot of fairy tales, and I like that light fantasy stuff. I am more likely to read that than I think watch the movie or okay. watch a movie along those same lines.
Okay. I was just going to ask you, do you feel like your reading and your movie tastes align? And it sounds like they do not. That what you're mm-hmm. going to pick up to read is much different than when you're going to choose to watch with your right. eyes.
Yes. Although... maybe a standard across the board is I don't really watch chick flicks or rom-coms. So I'm not going to read the yeah. chick flick rom-coms either. And so that's kind of the same across the board.
Yeah. I would say that too. Even though I am not completely opposed to a romance novel sure. as far as reading goes, I very rarely will watch romance
yeah.
as a movie, rom-com or straight mm-hmm. up romance. But I am going to make an exception today mm-hmm. and talk about not necessarily a particular book, but an author I would love sure. to see interpreted on the screen.
Yeah. Now, this is an interesting conversation to have because I just recently compiled a list of all of the movies that I need to watch that I haven't yet.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few rom-coms, chick flicks, like Jurassic Park is on that list, The Godfather. Yeah. Like,
well, Jurassic Park is not a rom-com.
Right. Well, but I just mean like all
yes.
the spread of movies that I need to watch is...
wide and diverse.
Right, yeah. right. Which is very interesting, just thinking about the movies or the books that I'm then bringing to the table and how, just kind of thinking about how they all relate to each other.
Yeah. I read pretty eclectically, mm-hmm. pretty diversely. And I think that my big screen, small screen choices mm-hmm. tend to be more narrow. Mm. Especially small screen, when Jay and I want to sit down and watch something together, mm-hmm. we tend to either watch period series, like mm-hmm. we loved watching All Creatures Great and Small on PBS. Mm-hmm. We have several murder mystery series going mm-hmm. that we like to watch. And we choose those as a couple mm-hmm. based on setting, like where it's located. Right now we're finishing up Hinterland, which I'm watching for the second time mm-hmm. because it's based in Wales. And we like being there.
Right.
Because we went to Wales in the fall. But I definitely feel like I read more widely, more diversely, more eclectically than I do with my movie choices. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this has to do with age, but I just find myself not wanting to watch adaptations of books I've read anymore.
Yes.
Because I just feel like I'm going to be disappointed in the interpretation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this is going to be an interesting thought experiment, because I'm going to bring books that I've yeah. really enjoyed that I would love to watch on the screen, mm-hmm. but the director and the producer
right.
and everybody involved is going to have to
be perfect.
Yeah, they're going to have to do what I want them to do to yeah. make the movie a success for me.
Right. You brought up an interesting point, though, Mom, about what you watch with Dad. And I think maybe that's what I should say, that what I pick to watch by myself and then what Ben and I watch together are a little bit different.
Oh, so absolutely. Like,
right.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an interesting other variable to add into this conversation too.
Yeah.
So like together we watched Fringe, Black Mirror. Uh-huh. He watched Gilmore Girls with me, which was a very odd experience.
Did he enjoy it?
It was one that he'd sit around and watch more than other shows that I've watched.
Yeah.
So like Downton Abbey or Gilded Age, he would just call busybodies like
being involved in everybody else's business. Yeah.
What was he calling it? Historical soap operas is what it was. I mean,
in truth, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But then thinking about how the movies are influenced by those relationships or like the book. So like I would have never have read A Girl With All the Gifts by myself, but we read that together as a family.
Right.
So
and you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very different, I think, profiles that we're looking at in terms of movies and books and how those things overlap on each other.
Right. Oh, if I'm looking for a movie, if I'm by myself and I want to watch something, I will go to classic musicals, classic song and dance movies with like Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly. Yeah. But then I also just will watch almost anything on my own, anything that strikes my fancy, anything from drama to science fiction, usually not horror by myself. If I'm going to watch anything and I'm not a horror movie person anyway. I mean, we watched The Woman in Black and I actually screamed out loud at one point. I felt like I was being tortured because it was scary. But I tend to lean more into that kind of stuff on my own. Mm-hmm. I love to watch things like Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth and Jennifer Ealy, which I think we've talked about on the show many
times.
Just
once or twice.
But those are the types of things that I'm going to choose on my own. I'll even revert back to Disney princess movies, just depending on the type of mood that I'm in.
Right. Are you a rewatcher?
Yeah. 100%.
How do you think that that's different than rereading a book?
I don't think it is. It gives me the same comfort. The movies I'm rewatching because I love them. They did something for me, whatever it was, that I want to recapture. And that's why I reread too.
Sure.
So
then are you an avid rereader?
I am.
Okay.
I haven't been lately so much because there have been so many new books that are coming out that are really exciting to me. So I haven't been rereading, but I honestly considered it today because I've been in such a reading slump. I was doing a long drive. I wanted to listen to a book and I couldn't think. There was nothing out of all the audiobooks I own. Nothing was interesting me. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just listen to Georgette Heyer Regency. Story or Beauty by Robin McKinley. Like I reread when I don't know what else to do with myself as far as reading goes. And it helps me to get out of a reading slump.
Sure. And that's so interesting because I'm not much of a rereader.
I know.
Unless it's a book that meant something to me on a significant level. But I look at rereading and rewatching things as like, I know that, so like Downton Abbey, because I know what's happening in that show, I'm less likely to watch it again because of the emotional things that I know are coming. Like, I don't want to relive that.
Right.
And so books are kind of the same way. But it's interesting, the ones that fall under the category for me of I will reread and I will rewatch versus not. So like Princess Bride, that's always on rotation.
Right.
Or the Cinderella with Brandy and Whitney Houston, always on rotation. Or Ever After, always.
Yeah.
But those are like the main ones that I'll redo, or like Harry Potter, I'll reread. Jane Eyre, I will reread. That's about it. So I think it's also interesting which ones kind of fall in the category of reread, rewatch, as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I definitely like returning to movies that I've enjoyed in the past, and I certainly enjoy rereading books. Well, why don't we just dive right in? And just to reiterate, listeners, we're not doing fictional worlds we want to visit. We're doing books that we would love to see adapted into either movies or miniseries or a long-running series on the big screen or the small screen. So what's the first book that you want to talk about, Julia?
The first one is Walk Two Moons by Sharon Creech.
Okay, you've brought this book to the show before.
Yes. This was my favorite book growing up for many, many years. It tells the story of Sal, who is working through some personal tragedies. And she is taken on a cross-country road trip with her grandparents under the guise of, quote-unquote, finding her mom. But there are a couple other things to it as well. And on the road trip, she is tasked with telling her grandparents, I think they say, spin us a yarn. And so she's telling them a story. And in telling them the story, she's talking about her life at school, a friend that she makes, and there's a bit of self-discovery along the way. I think this would make a phenomenal movie. And it would kind of go the way of like Art of Racing in the Rain or Marley and Me. Mm-hmm. One of those movies that looks at human things.
Yeah.
But does it in a way that's tender. And you can see it's tender, but it doesn't shy away from the hard things in the story so that it ends and you just feel, like that was a good movie to watch, a good show to watch. Mm-hmm. I think I'm biased to this one because it was a favorite of mine for so long. And so to be able to be like, I want to watch this movie would just be really, really nice. And mm-hmm. it's a cross-country road trip, so you'd get some great landscapes in that too. Mm-hmm. The director, though, would have to be very particular.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that any actor would be able, or any director and actor even, would be able to handle the story the way it needs to.
Okay. I was going to say, it's a road trip. That's always a good,
yeah.
That's always a good time. I was thinking of the movie, and I can't even recall the name of it, but it's about this little girl who wants to be in a talent contest or a beauty show for girls, and her whole family is traveling with her, and I think it's her grandfather dies along the way, and they actually are carrying his body in the back of the station wagon. I can't remember it's called.
I can't even
think of the actors that are in it. But it was funny, but it was poignant.
Little Miss Sunshine?
Yes. Oh my word, yes, that's it. Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay.
And it was just so good.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was weirder than weird.
Yeah.
But it was a great, great movie. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, I don't know, it just sounds like Walk Two Moons kind of follows that same direction or that same plot arc, even though your book is a middle grade and Little Miss Sunshine is
not
adult.
Yeah.
Very.
Yes. And I think that's the other thing too, that Sharon Creech's writing lends itself to a movie adaptation very well, in the way that it just tells this big overarching story. Like you could see the narration over a car on the highway. Like you could see these things play out in a movie. I think it would be a great treat to see this on the big screen.
Yeah. Well, the first book that I would love to see done in a movie is The Marriage Portrait by Maigret O'Farrell.
Yes.
This is a book that we did for our very first Three Peas in a Pod episode. We've talked about it over and over again.
Yes.
So I'm not going to beat the synopsis to death, but I will say that it is about a young woman whose name is Lucrezia de' Medici. Mm-hmm. It's in the 1500s as far as setting goes. And you just follow her life from the time she's born until she marries her husband, who was it was an arranged marriage. The man was supposed to marry her sister, and her sister died.
Yes, yes.
But I just think this movie would be a fabulous movie to experience visually because of the setting, Renaissance Italy. Mm-hmm. I think the costumes and the sets would just be fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think about her home where she lived and then the beautiful place that they honeymooned,
the villa.
And then as the book gets darker, I just feel like you could do so much with that as far as setting and atmosphere with the movie.
Yeah.
Plus I think the drama in that book environment would just be so incredible to watch play out.
Yeah.
So that's my first choice. I love historical fiction. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy watching historical drama. Mm-hmm. That is one of my favorite things to view on a screen. Mm-hmm. So this came to my mind automatically. I just thought it would be wonderful.
Yeah. I think this one would lend very well to a short series.
Yeah.
Because of how the tension builds.
Yes.
I think it would, like, I would watch it as a series.
Yeah.
A movie, I think, because of that tension, would be a little intense. Mm-hmm. Like, I would want it to just be over. Whereas a series, I think, would be.
Plus, it's almost set up in a natural break for like a three or a four part mini series. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it would be so good.
Yeah.
So good. And that's another one where the actors would have to do it right, because whoever would play Alfonso d'Este, he would have to do it in such a way that you really like him at the beginning and you really hate him at the end. So it'd be such a fine line to walk.
And his leonine cousin, I forget what his name is.
I forget.
The brooding,
scary dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also would have to be just right on point.
Right.
So I think it would be great.
Yeah. That would be so good.
I would love to see that done.
Are there any actors that you think that are current in Hollywood that you think would be good fits in there?
I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I didn't do any investigation for that.
I wonder if Anya Taylor-Joy would be a good fit for Lucrezia. But I almost see Lucrezia as a little bit more not.
Yeah. No, I would have to do a little bit of investigation for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My next book is a Gail Carson Levine.
Oh, okay.
And that's Fairest.
Okay. And this is
Snow White. Yes.
Got it.
So firstly, I think this one would be a fun, like, companion to Ella Enchanted, because it takes place in a neighboring country in that kingdom. So you have Frel, where Ella lives, and then you have Eorthia, which is where her best friend lives, and the story takes place in Eorthia.
Okay.
So Fairest, it is not Gail Carson Levine's most well-known. I was actually reading Goodreads, and it's one of the least liked books. But it tells the story of Azza, who is adopted when she's pretty young, and her looks are deemed unattractive by the rest of the country because she doesn't meet the standard beauty standards. But she has a really unique gift. In Eorthian culture, specifically in like high society settings, they communicate through singing instead of talking. And she has a magical voice that she can also throw.
Okay.
And so she kind of uses this and learns how to view herself through that ability instead of her looks. Of course, it's Snow White, so there is a little bit of that story played into it. If I remember correctly, there's a lot of conversation about dwarves or goblins. It's one of those creatures. I forget which one it is in the book. So you see a lot of that world in there. Then you get this Eorthian culture of music and singing. So I think it'd be very visually and auditory, a very complex kind of movie to look at. But the thing that made me really want to see this as a movie is there are some components of Azza's beauty that aren't seen as pretty until they're in the right context.
Okay.
And so being able to see that play out and that transformation happen, I think would be really, really cool. And I'm going to be careful of not giving too much away, because part of that is what makes the book engaging. But I would just love to see this story played out in a way so that you could see Azza honored as standing out in the culture versus in a culture she's actually supposed to be in.
Now, I have a question for you, because Ella Enchanted, the movie, is quite different than Ella Enchanted, the book. Would you want Fairest to be similar to Ella Enchanted, the movie, or would you prefer a pretty faithful adaptation to the book?
So Fairest, and then she has another book, Ever. They are darker than Ella.
Okay.
So I think if you were to take Fairest and put it in the Anne Hathaway movie, it wouldn't read the same.
It would be inauthentic.
Yeah, it would feel a little weird against what it's trying to do. But I think that if... because I think they've always talked about making an Ella Enchanted too, like revisiting that country again. Mm-hmm. I think this is where this could fit as a companion. It wouldn't be, Ella Enchanted too, but it would be a companion.
Yeah,
because you could see it kind of in a similar style, but yet not that far,
not quite as campy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds good. I think that's a movie that I would watch.
Yeah, and sure. I love a good fairy tale.
I do too.
So
yeah.
Yeah, that's my pick there.
My next suggestion for a movie is West with Giraffes. And this is by Linda Rutledge. And I do think I talked about this on the show at some point.
Towards the beginning.
It's about Woodrow Wilson Nickel, goes by Woody. He's a teenager when the story starts. This is during the time of the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl, and he finds himself in New York City. and he hears about two giraffes that have come in to New York City, and they are traveling across the country to California. Mm-hmm. And he wants to be the driver, mm-hmm. and he finagles his mm-hmm. way into it, and he is a driver. He has a passenger who is taking care of the giraffes. Mm-hmm. He has a ton of knowledge of zoo mm-hmm. animals, and so they kind of partner up and carry these giraffes across country. That's what the book is.
Okay.
It's based on a true story. There were actually two giraffes mm. that did travel across the country during the Great Depression. There are news articles. There are photographs. Mm-hmm. So this is based on a real thing. Mm-hmm. The reason that I think this would make a great movie, number one, it's a road trip. I love a road trip. I love a movie mm-hmm. that is a road trip. And I really love a book that's a road trip. I like the historical setting. Mm-hmm. I think the Great Depression and particularly the Dust Bowl region of the United States is fascinating. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see a movie based in that setting. And it's across country. So you're going to see all different parts of the United States mm-hmm. during that time, which I think is fascinating. I love historical dramas. So mm-hmm. just that appeals to me in general. And this is a very complicated story in that it's a coming of age story about Woody. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a love interest. There's some drama because there are people who want those giraffes. Mm. They don't want them to get to California to the zoo. They want them. Mm. So they are battling some pretty nasty people mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to get the giraffes someplace safe. And it's just a heartwarming story. And sometimes you just want to read or watch a story like that.
Yeah.
So I think taking all of that into account, I just think it would be delightful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I remember when you were talking about this and it sounded really intriguing. And you said that this was based off of a real thing.
Yeah,
right.
You can look up the pictures.
Yeah.
It's a historical event.
I love stories like that, or even I think I'm more likely to watch a movie about something like that than like read it. So like The Crown, for mm-hmm. example, didn't finish the show. I'm not going to finish the show. But being able to see some of these historical things happen that maybe I never would have known about otherwise was really cool. And so if this would to become a movie, I would probably watch it very easily.
Yeah, it's just the whole thing just seems like it would be a wonderful visual experience mm-hmm. to me. Mm-hmm. The giraffes, I think even just the giraffes would be great to watch them as they're traveling across the country, because they stuck them in the back of a lorry, this mm. wooden box, and their head stuck out as they were traveling down the road. I just think it would be fun. I think it would be fun and funny and heartwarming and yeah. poignant. Just so, so good. Mm-hmm. So
those poor giraffes.
I know. Well, and they were traumatized anyway because they had a very rough go of it mm-hmm. coming across the ocean. Mm-hmm. They thought they were going to die. Mm. So yeah, quite an experience for them
yeah.
too.
Yikes.
So that is West with Giraffes.
Okay.
What's your next book to movie suggestion?
I must have just been on a bit of a dark pattern here, because the next book is Revolution by Jennifer Donnelly.
Okay.
This one was really popular when I was in high school. Maybe not really popular, but it was maybe trendy
okay.
at that time. It's a darker story of teenage angst, but also grief. I must need to process something, because a lot of my books right now have to deal with grief. I don't know.
Maybe that's why you're in a reading slump.
Maybe. But Andy is her name. She is frustrated because her father left her mother and her younger brother was killed in a car accident. So she's just dealing with a lot of just not good stuff. And she's attending a really prestigious music school and is very close to being kicked out. And so her father comes, summons her to Paris for winter break so that he can keep an eye on her, keep her on track. And while she is there, she discovers a diary, and I'm totally going to butcher this name, of Alexandrine Paradis.
Okay.
We'll go with it. Mm-hmm. Who was a young woman during the French Revolution.
Okay.
Now, the French Revolution era, so like Marie Antoinette-ish to post Robespierre, mm-hmm. is another time of history that I'm very fascinated with. Mm-hmm. As Andy is reading this journal, it begins to take on a bit of an obsessive nature. So now we're seeing a split timeline.
Okay.
There's a part in the catacombs. There's some interesting personal developments for Andy. I think this one would be an interesting series instead of a movie. I think it would be very similar to The Magicians, which is a kind of a dark-ish fantasy show on Netflix.
Yeah, a lot of people compare it to like a grown-up Harry Potter.
Yeah. And because of the nature of maybe dealing with some heavier topics for teens, I might even compare it to Euphoria. Not in the same degree, but looking at some of the themings.
Okay.
I enjoyed this book a lot because of the look at two women across two different time frames and how they're both, they don't need each other, obviously, because Alexandrine had no idea who Andy was, but right. Looking at how they have an impact on each other's stories, mm-hmm. I just found to be really nice. And I think this would be a great show to examine that, to take a look at grief and the historical nature of things. I think the French Revolution, specifically with Robespierre, is a part of time where like not a ton of movies or stuff is made about it. So to look at this part of time, but then also it touches on like Marie Antoinette, some of her youngest sons went missing and they don't know where they are. Mm-hmm. And I learned about that through this book.
Okay.
And so touching on some of those historical time markers, mm-hmm. I think would be really interesting to see play out as well.
Yeah. I think that would be a fun movie to watch with the dual timelines.
Yeah.
Getting that historical perspective with the costumes mm-hmm. and the historical setting, and then you have mm-hmm. this person who's in a contemporary setting dealing with what she thinks are contemporary issues.
Yeah.
And would be really fun.
And I think it would be an added element to that to see, okay, in the split timelines, you see where Andy's walking, and then to take that same place, but then put it in the previous timeline.
Yeah.
I think would be a really cool way to play that out.
That's a nice contrast or a nice juxtaposition.
Yeah. Yeah. And but then even in like the landmarks, so like gardens or like main public city spots.
Yeah.
And to see that and how it's changed over time would be really cool too.
Yeah. Yeah. I would enjoy that. Definitely. Yeah. That's a movie I would enjoy.
It is dark. There's the first couple of chapters opening up with teens talking about drug usage mm-hmm. and some suicide attempts. So it swings out of the gate pretty heavy and pretty dark.
Yeah.
But it does end on a pretty light note. So,
well, let's just keep talking about darkness.
Okay,
then.
Great.
I'm going to bring a Neil Gaiman book next.
Okay.
It's I'm not sure if it's considered middle grade or young adult. If it is middle grade, I'm going to say older middle mm-hmm. grade. It's called The Graveyard Book. Mm. And this is Neil Gaiman's attempt to retell the story of The Jungle Book.
Mm.
So we have a main character named Nobody. Owens, they call him Bod. Mm. And right at the start of the book, his whole family is murdered.
Mm.
He is a tiny baby, just a toddler, mm-hmm. and he manages to escape.
Mm.
And he ends up in the graveyard.
Mm.
And so the ghosts in the graveyard adopt him. Two in particular adopt him and raise him. And then on top of that, he has what I would consider a guardian or a godfather mm-hmm. who is also kind of a mythical creature. And mm. I don't want to give any of it away. But you follow him and his adventures in the graveyard and how these ghosts are raising him and how his guardian is trying to help mm-hmm. him become an adult. It's scary, but it is a retelling of the Jungle Book. So as you're reading along, you can match up the points of the Jungle Book mm-hmm. with the story. The reason I think this would make a great movie is because I've already seen Coraline adapted.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a stop action movie, correct?
I think it's, yes.
Or
I think
it's claymation. Okay. I think this would also do well with that. Mm-hmm. But I also think that it would be great with just human actors and CGI to do mm-hmm. all of like the settings and the scary things.
Sure.
It would be eerie and dark. There are, like I said, there's darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Not only was Bod's family murdered, but the person who was doing the killing is still looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sense of danger and their evil lurks all over the place, mm-hmm. even in the graveyard. Like he does some things he shouldn't and gets caught in some places he really doesn't want to be.
Mm.
But it would just be a great Halloween movie. Just
yeah.
perfect. And it's not so horrifying that you can't open your eyes and watch certain parts, it would just be really spooky and creepy.
Okay.
But good. It's such a good story.
Yeah.
And you end up just really caring so much about Bod and what happens to him.
I know I need to read this book. Yeah. I think you tell me every year that I need to read
it. It's just so good. This is a book I do reread.
Okay.
And I would definitely watch this if this was a movie. But if you've ever seen Coraline the movie, that's scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And this book would be scary like that if it was made into a movie.
Yeah. Neil Gaiman has a nice scary streak in his writing.
Well, he gets even way darker than that, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking of Neverwhere, and that goes from 0 to 100 real fast.
Yeah. He definitely knows how to do creepy, spooky books. And even for younger readers, they walk the line. They get pretty close to the edge.
Stardust.
Yeah.
Or is that what it is? Stardust?
Yeah, but that's not for our kids.
Sure, but I was thinking about in terms of the books that I've read, in terms of Darkness, I think that one's a little bit perhaps lighter than
it
some
is
of his
lighter,
others.
But it still has, like, Fairyland has some darkness
in
it.
Oh, yes. I'm not arguing that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually going to put Good Omens on my list and then realized it was already a TV show. Yeah.
This would definitely be a movie. Yes. I would not make the Graveyard Book into a series or a mini series. No, I would definitely make it a movie.
Yeah.
Once and done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think makes a book better suited for a movie versus a series? Because I feel like we've been throwing, like, some of them are falling into different categories. So do you think it's the nature of the story, or is it the story, the subject of
it
the
could,
story?
It could be the length of the book.
Okay.
It could be how a book is structured, that it's easily broken down into parts that make sense, especially if you feel like you need all the parts. Because when you do a movie, you're not always getting everything you want. You're getting, like, an overarching interpretation of a book. I have a couple of other suggestions that definitely would have to be series, but that's because they're based on a number of books in a series, so the show would have to be a series.
Sure, sure. Okay. And I wonder if part of it is, too, just personal preference. Like, I wouldn't want this to be done in an hour and a half. I want to see more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then some, like, I feel this way about the Hobbit movies that were done. I feel like they had to add too much to the book to make it a trilogy.
Which
when
it
they could have done a duology and done it fine.
And done it very, very well.
Yeah.
And very truthful.
So anyway, I didn't really think through why I would do a movie versus a series, but that is probably why.
Okay.
So are we doing a movie or a series next?
A series.
Okay.
Because it's an actual series.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yes. So the next one I think I've hardly talked about on the show, and that's The Lunar Chronicles by Marissa Mayer.
Right.
Gosh, how do I talk about the series? So this is taking known fairy tales and putting them in a dystopian, futuristic world.
Yeah.
The first book, Cinder, which was super popular in the mid-2010s.
I read that. Yeah.
Yes. Takes Cinderella and makes her a cyborg. And I'm not giving anything away with that. You find out very quickly that she's a cyborg. The second book, Scarlet, is a little Red Riding Hood, where the wolf counterpart is a mutant from the moon.
Okay.
The third book is Cress, about Rapunzel, and she is a computer genius stuck in a satellite monitoring for the enemy. And then the final book is Winter, and that is Snow White, and she is a mentally unstable person in line for the throne.
Okay.
Now, these books all come together at the end towards this really big finale. So it's setting up a much, like, obviously it's a much larger story.
Right. There's an overarching
plot
that goes along through the books. Yeah.
The first one, Cinder, takes place in what is called New Beijing, so New China. Scarlet takes place in France. Cress is space.
Yeah.
And then Winter is on the moon. So you have some of these super cool landscapes that you could see. And it's a space story. I love space. I love futuristic space. I love looking at what the technology could be like.
Yeah.
Super cool. And I loved this series. I think this is a series that I am likely to reread. I think I've reread the first one a couple of times. But like the series I would read as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing obviously how the characters are designed. Seeing the landscapes. like New Beijing would be so cool. It opens in a market. Like that would be fabulous. Seeing how some of the political intrigues or how the male counterparts are crafted and designed. Mm-hmm. The culture on the moon is a very unique one. I think at one point during a ball, somebody, like the costuming was such that a woman was walking around with a fishbowl on her head with an actual fish in it. Like there's just, it's a unique culture.
Yeah.
So to see some of that played out,
yeah,
to see how the castle on the moon looks. So I would love to see some of this,
yeah,
visually. I think it'd be a very visually intriguing series.
Yes, I agree 100%. I've only read Cinder, but even that, just that book, mm-hmm, I think would be an incredible movie to, yeah, watch if it was done well with the settings.
Yes.
And the, yeah, it would just be,
yes,
great. I'm surprised it hasn't been done.
Right. Well, I know that there have been talks about making it into an animated series.
Okay.
I think that's a little bit more of how Marissa Mayer initially intended it to be, not an anime style, but kind of along those graphic lines,
like Avatar or something like that.
Yeah, kind of. But I think this would be phenomenally done as a true live action, yeah, couple of movies.
Yeah,
I think it would be spectacular, and the ability for the CGI people to have a run with their imagination. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I would be at every single like premiere of that. First ticket, let's go.
Yeah,
that would be so cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be a great viewing experience.
Yeah. Now, because I know this series so well, this would be like how we were talking about earlier, that I'd be very particular about who does it. And I would be very upset if it strays too far from the original material.
You'd want it to be pretty faithful.
Yes, I wouldn't, yeah, want it to pull an Elle Enchanted. I want it to be what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, let's stay in space.
Okay, please.
And I'm going to suggest another series. Mm-hmm. And that is because this is a series of novellas, mm-hmm, and one novel, I think. Mm-hmm. Book number 5 maybe is a true novel. Mm. I'd like to see the Murderbot Diaries, mm, done into a series. The Murderbot Diaries is written by Martha Wells.
Okay.
And it focuses on what I would call a cyborg, mm, partly human, partly machine, mm-hmm, who calls itself Murderbot, mm, because it is a security unit. It is responsible for keeping humans safe. Mm. And on one of the missions, it lost some of its humans. Mm. And so I keep saying he, because when I read the book, it sounds like a he in my mind,
oh,
but
sure,
it's a cyborg. It doesn't, yeah, doesn't have gender.
Right. It just is.
Yeah. So anyway, the second thing that makes this particular SEC unit interesting, mm-hmm, is it has overridden its governor.
Oh.
So it is now autonomous.
Oh, no.
It can do what it wants, but it obeys orders, mm-hmm, because it doesn't want anyone else to know, mm, that it is autonomous. Mm-hmm. It is an introvert. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really like being around anybody. It doesn't, mm-hmm, like people looking at it. And it really just wants to spend all day watching soap operas and shows. So when it's not working, that's what it wants to do. And I know this sounds bizarre, but the books are just so fun. Mm-hmm. They're so fun. Very action-packed. Mm. And there's a whole cast of human characters and robots and cyborgs. And things happen, mm, because he is it. It, mm-hmm, is a SEC unit for a company that rents out equipment for people to terraform other planets.
Oh.
So you're doing all of this traveling, mm-hmm, you're meeting all of these different situations that are often very dangerous. Mm-hmm. You're going to planets that you really don't know what you're going to encounter. Mm-hmm. There are repeat humans that show up regularly, mm, who have kind of adopted Murderbot. They figured out that it has overridden its governor and they know a lot about it, and, mm, they take care of it. And so there are two parts to this. There's all the action, like spacey stuff, and then there's the relationship stuff, and you see Murderbot just opening up and becoming, mm, more attached, mm-hmm, to these group of humans. Mm. There's a sentient ship.
Okay.
That's a whole spaceship that also has a brain, mm, and Murderbot has a special connection to the ship. And, mm, so it's just fun. It's fun. It's, yeah, just good time, fun, happy feeling, mm-hmm, sci-fi.
Yeah. There was a show on Nickelodeon for a while called My Life as a Teenage Robot, I think it was,
yeah,
about a teenage robot. And the episodes were weird, but they were fun because of that sci-fi component of a robot is living everyday life. What's going on?
Yeah.
And so as you're talking about it, I was kind of reminded of that show.
Yeah.
It sounds like it would be absolutely hysterical to watch. Now, do you think it'll be better as a cartoon or like, no?
I would want to see this.
Okay.
In real, like real actors, a real cyborg, real planets. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would want to see this as a cartoon. I'd want to see it for real.
Okay.
Like Star Wars for real.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And you said that was a series, like just like little short books?
Yeah, novellas. I don't think most of them are over 150 pages.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit longer than that. Under 200 for sure.
Yeah.
The one novel is barely 300 pages. Okay. So even the novel is short. Yeah. And it's action packed. Like there's a lot of action.
Yeah.
So you would not be bored ever. Not that you would ever watch a show or a series that was going to make you bored, but I just think this would be so much fun. I love watching sci-fi and fantasy on the screen, big and small.
Me too.
So I had to put one sci-fi on here.
Yeah.
What are we watching next, Julia?
10,000 Doors of January.
Okay. All right. Well, you brought this to the show already.
I did. So I know in the last show I talked about one of the lands in the book that I didn't want to talk about because we were going to bring it to the show.
Yes.
Well, full circle moment because I'm going to talk about it.
Okay, tell us.
This book, just for those that maybe haven't heard about it yet, A January Scholar is the ward of a very rich man in the early 1900s. And she finds a book and she starts to just write one day when she's really young. And it opens a door, and she's able to step through a land and picks up a coin. And the coin kind of becomes a token for her, that as she begins to feel trapped as she's growing up, being taught how to be a proper lady, do as I say, that the coin reminds her that there's better things out there. And through a series of frustrating and upsetting events, she learns that she is part of a culture that can write things into being. So this story takes Inkheart and kind of takes it a couple steps further.
Okay.
In her discovery of this, she also learns about the existence of thousands of other places that you can only access through doors. And these doors, once sealed, are sealed forever. So she then begins to learn about these other places. And the one world that we spend the most time in is called the Written. And it is a world populated by hundreds of islands, and people are tattooed for their identity. So when they're married, they get tattooed. When they have kids, they get tattooed. Like the writing, the written, it's very important.
Right. It tells the story of their life.
Yes. Yes. This would be, I think, phenomenal to watch as a movie because of the visual creativity that would be needed to represent all of the different worlds. Because part of the book is told through a letter, you're then getting not a side story, but like you're getting another person's perspective thrown in. So you could show these worlds through that other person's time in those lands. I think it would be super cool. And maybe on a selfish part, I kept forgetting that January is not supposed to look like everybody else, that her skin is a little bit darker. She just looks
different. Yeah.
So being able to constantly see her as that way would be helpful for me as I was remembering what was going on. But the creativity in the fantasy world, I think, would be what would make this a top-notch movie.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And it ends in a way that you think could lead into a second book or into a second movie, and I don't think it does. So just ending it on that kind of... I like movies that end that way, that you're not sure, like, where's this going? What's going to happen next?
You don't get all the answers at the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, I want to read the book too, but the movie sounds good.
Yes. This would be another one where I would be first in line with the ticket. Put me in the seat. Let's go. I got my bucket of popcorn.
You know what, though? I think, too, like that level of anticipation, that just means that you could be that much disappointed as well.
Right. And this is another one that I think there are some stories that lend themselves better to being fiddled with a little bit more than others. So when I think about like the 100-year-old man who jumped out the window, because of everything that happens in that book, you could probably give or take a couple of things and it would be okay. Versus like this, things need to happen at a specific time in a specific way in order to get what you need to get.
Right.
So if it got fiddled with in any way, I would definitely be very disappointed.
So the writers can't mess. They have to take the book and just put the screenplay together.
Yep. I will say, when I was visualizing the characters for this, the very rich dude, I don't remember his name.
Okay.
But I kept picturing him as the dad from Tarzan. The short, long, big mustache.
Oh,
bald,
yes.
Like, that's how I kept picturing him.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the time period that they're operating
in. The stereotypical English African explorer with
right.
The,
yeah. I mean, the
khakis and
yes.
Yeah.
This does take place in New England, so not quite the khakis and not quite right. The explorer, but that kind of vibe of,
yeah,
I'm friendly, I'm very friendly, but I don't think we see it so much with Tarzan's dad of the dark underbelly
yes.
that we see in the
okay
this character.
Yeah.
But
well, the last series I want to talk about, this would have to be an ongoing series. Mm. Like all of the British murder mystery series I like to watch. And some of my favorite are historical period mm-hmm. dramas. Mm-hmm. Like there is one called Dalgliesh, which is he's a detective, mm-hmm. like a true detective, mm-hmm. but he's also a poet. He drives a sports car. He's just kind of suave and like a little bit sexy in an unusual Ooh. Kind of way.
Okay.
And then Foyle's War, which is about a man who is doing detective investigating during World War II. Mm. And then George Gently is a detective in the 1960s. So
okay.
that whole series, you're following people living in the 1960s.
Okay.
So I love period drama murder mysteries. Mm. The last book series that I would like to recommend for a small screen series is the Veronica Speedwell murder mystery series by Deanna Raiborn. I always listen to the audiobooks by Angeal Masters, and I'm pretty sure that that's why I love this series mm-hmm. so much, because she just does such a fantastic job with the books. Mm-hmm. But this series is based on a young woman named Veronica Speedwell. I think she's 27 mm-hmm. when the books start. The time frame is 1870, so Queen Victoria is still ruling. She has grown children, though. Mm. And Veronica finds herself in need of a bodyguard. Now, mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch of things that happened to get her to this point.
Sure.
But the bodyguard who is recommended is Stoker Templeton Vane. He is this big, muscular, dark, handsome man. He's got a scar on his face. He's got kind of a dark past. He kind of looks like a pirate. And the two of them team up. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be her bodyguard, but they're solving mysteries mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of sexual tension between the two of them. They kind of like each other and then they don't like each other. They do a lot of like butting heads. Mm. Veronica is an independent woman, very feminist at a time when mm-hmm. that would not be the case. She's a lepidopterist. That's mm-hmm. how she supports herself. So she goes on these expeditions looking for rare butterflies and then brings them back and sells them to wealthy collectors. So that's how she supports herself. And Stoker has been many things in his life, but he is at heart a naturalist. And he loves to do taxidermy. Mm. And part of what he does is he restores old taxidermy that's kind of been moth-eaten and falling apart.
Okay.
And that's how he supports himself. But the two of them get caught up in these crazy mysteries. Lots of times murders are involved. And they go on all these escapades, and it's just a ton of fun. Mm-hmm. The reason I think this would make a great series, at least for me, is it is historical. So again, I think this has been a theme for me throughout my suggestions. Mm-hmm. I love movies and shows that have a great historical setting so that the costumes, the clothing that the characters are wearing is interesting. This is London, and then they travel mm-hmm. all over England and sometimes out of the country. So you're getting to see all these different settings mm-hmm. in a time period of the late 1800s. And the chemistry between Veronica and Stoker is just fantastic. Just, It's just smoky. I don't even know how else to describe it. They do eventually get together. And you know that from book one, that they are eventually going to be a couple. But it takes until book seven, I think book seven, till that even remotely happens. Maybe book six. But it doesn't matter. It's all closed door, so you're not getting any intimate details. But it is very, there's a lot of sexual tension. There's a lot of innuendo in the books in particular. So if you don't like that kind of thing, this might be too spicy for you.
Sure.
I don't have any issues with that. So the show might be a little bit, not R-rated, but PG-13.
Sure, sure.
But it would just be so much fun to see them, to see the world they live in. They end up living with this wealthy lord who has this huge estate, and their one whole building is just filled with collected treasures from around the world. And Veronica and Stoker end up cataloging everything. Stoker is refurbing all the taxidermy. And then on this huge estate, there are these little follies everywhere, which are these little buildings. And Veronica lives in one and she's fixed it all up the way she wants it. Stoker lives in another and he's fixed it all. I just, I want to see this world. I want to see it. I want to experience it. And I want to follow these two people on their adventures because I just think it would be a ton of fun.
Yeah. No, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It sounds like not wholesome, but like kind of heartwarming.
Yeah.
Kind of just, it's been a stressful Friday. I'm going to sit down and watch this for hours and hours.
Yes. Because they're funny. They are funny together. Stoker is funny because he kind of has this dry sense of humor. And Veronica is constantly dragging him into these horrible experience situations. He doesn't want to, but he's always just like, all right. He just kind of has a defeated air sometimes. Yeah. Resigned. He's resigned a lot of times to what's going to happen. So very fun. I would love to see it done.
Yeah.
In some form. It would not be a movie. It would be a series or a miniseries.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it sounds great.
If you've ever watched Miss Scarlet and the Duke on PBS.
Okay.
For a Masterpiece Theater, I think that this would have that same kind of tone.
Okay.
So.
Which, did you hear that now it's just Miss Scarlet because the Duke left?
I know. And I haven't seen the last season, so I really don't know why it played out.
Yeah.
I just know that the Duke was ready to move on.
Yeah.
So they just wrote that into the script.
But, yeah.
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 So this could replace it. Because I don't think Stoker's going anywhere.
No. Yeah. Well, we covered quite a variety of topics today.
We
started very dark.
Yes.
And now ended with a very happy,
fun,
go lucky, fun.
Very fun tone at the end, even though it's murder mysteries.
I mean, that's the trend that we're all in right now is cozy murder mysteries, which is an oxymoron in and of itself.
It is. To be sure.
Yes.
But I love them too.
I know. Well, friends, thanks for sticking around through this episode and being flexible as we had to change our minds pretty last minute. We would love to know if you would think that any of our options would make great movies. Did we convince you of that? Are there any books that you've read that you think should be a movie or a series? And we know that we skipped over some very popular or common ones right now, like Emily Wilde.
Yes.
We were trying to pick from books we haven't really talked about
before. To be new and exciting.
Yeah. Keep things a little bit fresh.
Yes.
If we keep talking about the same books all the time, people might think that's all that we read. Up next on the docket, we have a really fun episode planned. In honor of Mother's Day, we are asking Nana back on the podcast. She was our first guest for our first Three Peas in a Pod.
Yes.
And we felt it was only fitting to have her come back for Mother's Day.
Right.
And we're going to have a fun little discussion about generational reading, specifically passed through mothers and daughters.
Yes.
And take a look at how that's impacted us as readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just going to be a really special, wonderful time.
Yeah, I do too.
I know we ask this all of the time, but if you would be so kind as to rate and review us.
On Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Yes, it helps us to continue to be seen by people who would like to join the community over here. And if you do enjoy being a part of this community, which I know that we are still working on a couple of things to make the community more engaging. I know we've talked about a website that we're working on and a few things. But if you enjoy being a part of our BookSnug community, Please don't forget to share us with your friends.
Yes.
We love seeing everybody who listens in and is part of people who enjoy the podcast. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us today. And we'd love for you to join us here again in the Book Snug in the next chapter.
Bye, friends. We'd love for you to continue today's conversation with us at the Booksnug_podcast on Instagram and at the Booksnug podcast on Facebook. All of our episodes can be found wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as at our website, thebooksnugpodcast.budsprout.com, where show notes for every episode can be found. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at thebooksnugpodcast@gmail.com.
As C.S. Lewis, one of our favorite authors, so famously said, "You can never have a cup of tea large enough or a book long enough to suit me," and we wholeheartedly agree.